Hello, everyone. You're listening to America Meditating Radio. We collect wisdom, inspire each other, and empower hearts on demand 24/7. I'm Sister Jenna, host of the syndicated America Meditating Radio. Join us as we talk one-on-one with leading experts who answer life's most compelling questions, because in a world of uncertainty, we need answers right here, right now. America Meditating Radio, a show for everyone to learn more about this amazing thing called life. Om Shanti. The time that we choose to be aware doesn't necessarily require me to just sit and meditate. But even while I walk and move around, I can be in a meditative awareness, which is awareness of the soul, the original, eternal, imperishable being of light. For a little while, I'd like to invite you to be present, to be here, and to be now. Allow your mind to settle in the moment, to relax. This meditation is about awareness. It's about becoming aware of your original and eternal self. It's about connecting to your truth. Let go of your name. And observe yourself feeling nameless. Let go of your gender to discontinue thinking you're a man or a woman. Let it go and observe how you would feel walking around without a gender. Let go of the role that you play and let go of the titles that you own. Observe how you're feeling as you are gradually letting go. Let go of your religion and put it aside just for now. And let go of your nationality and even the language that you're accustomed to. Imagine you have no name, gender, role, title, religion, nationality, or even a language. Ask yourself, how do you feel at this moment? And in this feeling, who would think of you and who would you think of? The Supreme Soul would think of you, and you, the liberated soul, would think of the Supreme. In this state of absolute freedom,
in truly who I am. A free, peaceful, pure, immortal, and eternal soul. Allow yourself to just be absorbed in this awareness. This time,
hello everyone. Welcome to America Meditating Radio. That was Letting Go from my Off the Grid Into the Heart meditation CD. I hope this finds you well and in a spirit of optimism despite the news coming out of the nation's capital in Washington, D.C. As much as our highest self know that all of this is about the transformation, the great transformation that has to take place now because we've become perhaps just too much of slaves to technology and to material possessions and to human bodies and to limited belief systems and ideas. We've become slaves to those areas of consciousness that we now find ourselves in a particular state of horror. Every day there's horror. Every day there is a nightmare happening on the Hill at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. And every day we're observing the games of the media projecting messaging on people who are sometimes too innocent to discern truth from illusion and to be a part of the theater. And there is no regard whatsoever for the vibrations and the energy that is being disseminated on our universe, on our planet, on our country, in our hearts. It's a very interesting time, my friends, and we're looking towards leadership like we never have before. For me, the meaning of a real leader is somebody who lives their life at a personal level based on deep principles, and that's natural for their leadership to be that which reflects those principles. And in Washington, D.C., where we're located, it's really a fine-tooth comb. Like, it's so rare to meet that. It's like you see the bits and pieces of information that you get off of the media, off your social media, and they're telling you things, and you're like, what is this? How can this be continuing? How can there be not one person that can stand up and say that's enough? And even when they do, they're silenced. But yet bigger voices can speak, you know, things that are not true, and they're not silenced. And so there's such an imbalance of conscious energy right now. There's such an imbalance of vibrations that we need leadership and people who have a cultivated sense of self-awareness. And to what extent are these leaders really bringing folks in front, really wanting to see others shine instead of them? And do they still think really small? Are they thinking really big? Sometimes the big that you think you're thinking is just to inflate the ego, but to think small could be to be humble. Nowadays, this is how like the languaging in the world is changing, that if somebody is just kind and embracing and respectful, they were like, oh, you're small, you're insignificant. It's almost as if you've got to go in really hard and hit them hard to be, like, seen. Well, I'd hope not, because we're definitely in need for more mindful leadership. And today our next guest is Mark Lesser. Mark is a CEO, Zen teacher, author, and leads trainings and talks worldwide. Mark has led mindfulness and emotional intelligence programs at many of the world's leading businesses and organizations, including Google, Grenning Tech, and Kaiser, and much more. He's currently the CEO of ZBA Associates, a company providing mindfulness-based leadership training and creating community by supporting ongoing groups. And previously, he served as the CEO and co-founder of the Search Inside Yourself Leadership Institute, whose core programs he helped develop within Google. Mark was a resident of the San Francisco Zen Center for 10 years and former director of Tzajara
Zen Mountain Center, and he currently leads Mill Valley Zen, a weekly meditation group. His new book is entitled Seven Practices of a Mindful Leader, and I am going to enjoy my conversation with Mark. Mark, Om Shanti. Welcome, my brother.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Why are you laughing?
Taking in all of your words. And actually, I had this really moving interview. It was a short radio interview yesterday with an African-American man was interviewing me from a small radio station. Well, I think it was out of New Orleans. And he was very, very quick and was asking me one question after another about each of the seven practices. He wanted clarification about what the seven practices were, and I responded in about 30 seconds to each, and then he said, okay, we're done. And then his whole voice and persona then changed, and he said, this is no longer part of the interview, but can I ask you something personally? And it was really potent. It really moved me, and to feel that persona from the person interviewing me to now he somehow shifted into his heart, and he said, how does it make you feel when everything is completely the opposite of the seven practices that you're talking about are being acted out in Washington, D.C.?
In the leadership in Washington, yes.
Yes.
Yes. And what did you say, Mark? What did you say?
I said, it breaks my heart. I said that it's such a horrible modeling that we have for leadership. That yes, it is exactly the lies and the posturing and everything,
manipulation,
lack of honesty. This is not leadership.
Yes.
This is leadership by.
This is leader sunk. It's leader sunk.
Yeah.
It's leader sunk. It's leader sunk.
Yeah. And yet, I think the challenge is how do we not create sides? How can we somehow create a space where, you know, I mean, ultimately, I think, you know, even, you know, I think from some ultimate level, I think we all want the same thing, right? We all want to be happy. We all want to be safe. We all want to care for each other, ultimately. But to find some way to cut down on the divisiveness and name-calling and look for actual solutions, and not that I have the answer to that in any way, but that's the question I'm holding in my heart.
Well, Mark, here's mine. When I do, because I'm in the midst of it and I'm okay with it, 2 years ago, I had to allow whatever was processing through me, as much as there is a lot of information about why I would be feeling the way that I was feeling, and I could have used any one of those aspects of wisdom and just let it sink in and move on. But something in my spirit was like, no, this is important. You need to know why you're feeling this way, why you're here. What's the answer? And I think that what's happening at this particular level that we're at is that I think many of us recognize that we are powerful beyond means. We know we are powerful, but we're also observing the current collective energy testing our powers, where we feel a sense of powerlessness because we begin to think about the generation behind us. And we think about, are we really going to live this through? Are we going to survive this? And then we think about God, and we think about the beauty of the human spirit, if it could channel this energy. And if you're like me in the mornings, I get up at 3:30, 4 o'clock, and I send my love to the White House and to the Hill. And I go, there's got to be one person who can feel my pure wishes. I know there's one of you in there that can feel that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, beautiful. That's beautiful. Well, hey, it's really great to be hanging out with you this morning.
So you have quite an interesting background, right? And you have the wisdom of a compassionate, mindful form of teaching. And we would love for our listeners to hear more about your story. Like, how did you go from a Zen monastery to teach mindfulness at Google?
Yeah, you know, part of that was my time in the Zen monastery, in a part, was very much colored by the work roles and leadership roles that I had there. I spent a year running the Zen monastery kitchen. This place is in the mountains in central California called Tassajara, and spectacular place, requires going over a 14-mile dirt road over a 5,000-foot pass. But that doesn't seem to stop people from going there, especially in the summertime when it turns into a resort and conference center. So part of being the role of being head cook was not just making meals for students during the retreat time, it was also producing these gourmet vegetarian meals for, you know, 70 to 80 overnight guests. So there was a kind of a high pressured environment, like kind of almost any kind of commercial kitchen might be. But it was so rooted in a sense of practice and service and kindness, as well as a sense of urgency and having high expectations. And then the following, about a year later, I was asked to be the director of Tassajara. And there I found myself very much in what was clearly a leadership role. And I had, you know, a staff of 60 people and budgets to manage and problems to solve. And I so relished and liked what felt like this such interesting integration about meditation practice, mindfulness practice, and leadership and work and getting things done. And I wondered, why isn't everybody doing this? This makes makes so much sense. And then I had this crazy idea that this was 35 years ago now. I thought, this is what I'm going to do with the rest of my life, is see about bringing these practices into the world of work. And I thought, well, I needed to get some more business training. I had just had 10 years of training in the world of mindfulness and meditation and a good deal of work experience, but I ended up going right from the Zen Center to getting an MBA degree at New York University. And then I ended up starting a couple of different companies. I started a greeting card and calendar company, one of the first companies in the world to make things out of recycled paper, and a company called Brush Dance, which I ran for about 15 years. And I went from there to working with leaders, doing executive coaching and trainings, and found myself being asked to help develop a mindfulness and emotional intelligence program at Google's headquarters in Mountain View. And the program, at the time when I got brought in, it was a Google engineer, had the name for the program. It was going to be called Search Inside Yourself, kind of a joke, a play on the, since Google's a search company. And over a period of a few years, we developed this mindfulness meditation science leadership program, and it became immensely popular, more and more popular within Google, so that there were huge waiting lists. And then a few years after that, we ended up starting an organization to bring this work out into the world. And you know, so that's much of my life has been working with in large corporations, but also with doctors and educators. And there's just such a beautiful, potent openness and need for this integration of people wanting to be, in some way, I simply say it's about how to be more fully yourself at work, how to bring a sense, how to bring more self-awareness, empathy, compassion.
How to bring light to
how
work.
To bring, yeah. But combined, but there's also to not leave out the other side of the equation, or what looks like the other side of the equation, to integrate, that it's also about results, effectiveness, budgets.
Of course.
And you know, and the hard stuff. It's so funny though, you know, people used to call this the soft skills. Well, no, these are the hard skills. How to actually collaborate with other people, how to work effectively with other people, It takes right. real practice.
Well, you know, Mark, and I'm sure you concur, it's all about a shift in consciousness. We've often felt that mystical leaders, Zen leaders, or meditators, they sit up on a mountaintop chanting Om or moving beads. And my interpretation of meditation and the result of it is I'm clear in my thinking, and I become pretty responsible for selecting the kinds of thoughts I need to have in my mind and the ones that I don't. And so that means if I'm in my business, in my home, taking care of my kids, I mean, we're running a multinational global corporation, 9,000 branches in 120 countries, and we're meditators. Don't tell me you're not going to want to see results and things are not going to be clear. The thing is right now is that a lot of folks are trying to understand it at a level of sincerity, I feel. In order for the real benefit of meditation to click into your consciousness, it needs to be really sincere. Now, here's the power of the challenge, Mark. Everything is moving really fast today. So what factors have you observed that are playing out in the busyness epidemic that we're experiencing?
It's funny. That was one of my previous books. I wrote a book called Less, Accomplishing More by Doing Less, which was very much about the busyness epidemic. But this book, too, Seven Practices of a Mindful Leader, so much of being mindful is noticing the tendency toward busyness and coming up with both, as you say, there's the practical solutions, and then there's also, I think, underneath that, the level of sincerity, wanting to sincerely wanting to be the best person that you can be, to sincerely wanting to help others. And I think that's the that combination of the sincerity about wanting to grow and learn and being open and looking for very practical solutions, like having a daily meditation practice, like bringing that practice into your daily life by simply listening more, like just noticing when we're not listening and stopping and being more curious, more attentive to both listening to ourselves, what are the deeper voices within us saying, but listening to and being curious about other views and other voices.
Thank you for sharing that. That was really important because I think we're struggling with listening to our own selves. And we opened up our conversation, Mark, on leadership. And in some ways for us, the devastation of the role of leadership, especially in how parents are being able to explain to their kids what our values, what our ethics, how should we understand that our karmic role when we're in front and people are looking to us for guidance, that there's a very deep karmic accountability connected to it. So when I look at the role of leadership, I look at a person who is very principle-based. And from the observing of their lives, you can just see the deep-rooted principle and values in the person. And that inspires me to be a better version of myself. Can you share with us a little bit about, is the aspect of mindful leadership connected to deep core spiritual principles that your mindful training with leaders entail?
Completely. You know, one of the things, one of the ways that I very specifically talk about meditation is that I sometimes use the metaphor of this short story about three bricklayers. You've probably heard this, you know, that someone sees three different people laying bricks and they go up to each of them and asks, what are they doing? And the first bricklayer says, well, I'm just laying bricks. I'm just putting these bricks in. The second one says, I'm supporting my family. I'm doing this activity with this intention. The third bricklayer says, I'm having a conversation with God. I'm building a church. And I think of meditation practice as similarly being, in a way, these three different activities rolled into what looks like one activity. That, yes, when we're doing meditation, we're just doing what we're doing. We're just sitting, just stopping, just sitting, just do that. That's great. That's one way to look at meditation. The other, which is maybe the most common way that I think people think about it, is we have some intention, right? We want to reduce stress. we want to be more present. We want to be more present for our children. We want to be good people. All that is whatever our intentions are. But then there's also, and I think this is what you were getting at, there's the third, which is the much more kind of prayer-like, spiritual, heartfelt, mysterious part of meditation in